Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
And I'm Steve.
Greg is away today, this week. Amy's out in the hallway playing with our new puppy. So she may or may not join us. Probably not, because puppy, greater sign, anything else, I think.
Given the choice between the two of us and an adorable puppy, she's making the right choice. You may hear me get up and get out.
Yeah, I think we're all debating just leaving this and playing with our new puppy. Anyway, give us a follow on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
You can follow me, at Safamod.
Greg is at GregOnSports, and Amy, of course, is at CFL Hottie Bowl. Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast, and also on Instagram, we're at PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Lots of great stuff going up on there all the time. And of course, as always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Double cheeseburger meal for just $5.99. And the Smarties Blizzard is back. Everybody's happy about that. I know you got one not too long ago when we did a Blizzard Blitz.
I've had far more of those than I care to admit openly on the air.
And you're probably going to go for another one, because right now, BOGO, 99 cents. Buy one, get the second one for 99 cents on Blizzards right now.
My wife thinks I'm going to pick up one for me, one for her. I'm picking up two for me.
Yeah. She can have whatever remnants, if those that actually exist with a Blizzard. I've never seen anybody not finish a Blizzard before, so good luck to Steve's wife.
Yeah, right.
Coming up on the show, we're going to have the opening kickoff. We're going to talk the latest Rider news. We're going to talk a little bit about CFL. We were heading out to Winnipeg today, actually, so that'll be on Wednesday, so that'll be a lot of fun. Hall of Fame announcement, player interviews, and we'll just see what else goes on during CFL week. That'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, this is episode 71 of the Piffles Podcast, and that is a holy number here in Riderville. What do you do when you hear 71 and you think of the Riders?
I think bandana, right off the bat.
And that's who we're going to have on the show tonight. We are going to have the man himself, Bobby J. Bobby Jurison is going to join us on the phone, and I'm going to throw some questions that all of our fans got for him. So we'll ask him some questions there. And we'll just see what else happens here on the Piffles Podcast. So let's get going. Time now for the opening kickoff. So the Riders making a little bit of headlines the last little bit since the last time that we've had an episode. Marcus Thigpen, that was the one that made the most noise, getting suspended for 2 games for PED use, basically steroids. And which kind of explains a lot. How he was able to not play football for so long and then come in and kind of dominate it, especially in the East semifinal against Ottawa. And he's gone for 2 games.
I actually can't decide what I'm more disappointed about. And I said this on the Blizzard Blitz that we did, was it last week? Am I more disappointed that he took steroids or that he got caught with basically Eastern Bloc steroids from the mid-90s? If you're gonna cheat, you gotta try, right? Like, I mean, not that I'm advocating the idea behind players juicing. I'm not for it unless it's widespread and open. You know, I'm not telling players out there to go juice up with whatever won't get caught. But how? Why this? Why not at least try and? I don't know. It's a sad situation to me.
See, and I'm actually against you on the whole using PEDs. Look at baseball from the late, what was it, 98, whatever year it was, when it was McGuire against Sosa. That was the best theater of sports that I've ever seen. Like, that was amazing. Watching both those guys go after the home run record, both of them crush it, and then still race each other for the all-time record in home runs in a single season. I was like, I don't care if these guys are juicing. This is fun to watch. So as long as everybody's juicing, it's still a fair level playing field, right?
And that's what
Let
I'm saying.
Let them juice. Who cares?
That's what I'm saying. If you open it up to everybody, fine. But if you're going to close it off and you're going to go out there and do it, don't be stupid.
Yeah. And that brings a great question. And Daryl Davis here in Regina brought up a good question or brought up a good point and said that the Riders should get fined for this as well. And see, and I saw he took a lot of flack on this, and everyone's
and
saying
rightfully so.
But you know what? If you don't want your players to do this, that's a good way to stop them. If the team's going to get fined for this, as well as the player, because the team does get punished, I guess, by losing their player for 2 games. And the same with Bruce Campbell, who's still a free agent, but I think we all expect him to re-sign with the Riders eventually. It does bring up a good point. if the league is serious about not having players juice and the team is serious about it, if the team takes flack for it and they lose, you know what? A fine isn't enough because teams in the CFL, like the Riders, a fine, whatever. They don't care about that. They make enough money. You lose a draft pick? I'm not saying it should be that extreme, but if it were, you can bet they're going to be going to their players and be like, don't you dare take anything. And if you do, your contract is terminated. Like, there's some, like, make it worth it. Make it worth the fine, and maybe things will change.
But if you're going to go that harsh, are you expecting teams to monitor their players 24/7? I can understand if you bring a guy who has a history of juicing and he gets caught. You know, you bring a Roy Finch back, or you bring Bruce Campbell back, and he gets caught again. Sure, I can see some form of punishment for the team because you knew what you were getting into. But if you're talking about a guy who's never been caught, has been played professional football for how many years, and has never done anything that suggests he would be a doper, what is the team supposed to do?
Well, I'm not saying it's the team's fault by any means, but that's the only way it'll stop. If you're serious about it stopping, there has to be very serious ramifications, right?
But will that stop it? Do you really think teams are going to go, or players are going to go, well, the team's going to cut me? No, because if the player's good enough, they're going to get another spot somewhere else, regardless of that 2-game suspension. I mean, obviously, we're looking at Bruce Campbell. He's not anywhere yet, but I think that's more a situation if he's wanting 18 games worth of money in 16 games is more my guess.
It's a good debate. I mean, I don't 100% agree with Daryl Davis and his take there, but I think it's not that bad of an idea. I think of it kind of like distracted driving. You know what? Oh, you get a $200 fine for texting while you're driving. That literally does not stop anybody. Impound their car. You want them to stop? Impound their car. Don't take away their license, because people will still drive without their license. Impound their car.
But then you're more talking like you're going to impound the neighbor's car because I got caught. Because if I'm driving, yeah, impound my car. That's the equivalent of a player getting suspended, in my opinion. Unless it's my kid. If he's driving, there's a whole new set of issues.
but do you understand where I'm coming from, though? Like, I mean, if you're going to make it worth it. Like, don't just be like, okay, well, here's a $5,000 fine. Really, in the CFL, like, come on. That's nothing.
If you're going to attack the team for these, then yes, you have to make it worth doing. It can't be just a little token slap on the wrist. Sure. I don't agree with the idea of fining the team for a first offense. Second offense, and again going forwards, yes.
I think that's probably better than anything, as if it is a second offense. So I totally see Daryl Davis's point here.
But then where do you draw the line? Is it just doping? Is it any other suspension? Where do you draw the line on what you... Because to me, would you fine a team because of, say, a guy gets suspended for a dirty hit? Is that the team's fault? You got to find the happy medium.
They're
there.
Still the employer, so... Like, right? in a general work business sense, the employer still gets some sort of fine / slap on the wrist, whatever it is. I mean, still, 100%, that player gets fined. And then maybe whatever the team gets fined, that comes out of his check too. The CFLPA would never sign off on that. Don't get me wrong, but maybe I don't know.
It's definitely an interesting debate, and he did open up a really good debate across the league.
And I realize that he's in the minority, and I'm in the minority with thinking that way, that the team maybe should take some brunt of punishment. But I think the team should be held a little bit accountable, not fully, but a little bit.
Yeah, I can agree to an extent.
Or just let everybody juice. Who cares?
Now we're talking. You want to talk about entertainment? You're right. Look, like you said,
Thigpen's 75-yard touchdown run there in the East semifinal. I want to see more of that.
Yeah. We talk about wanting exciting football. We want to see exciting sports. Just open it up, I guess.
don't dope, kids. Like, come on, don't cheat yourself. Anyway, I don't condone doping by any means, but if they're gonna do it, screw it, let everybody do it. Who cares? At that point, just let everybody do it, and then everybody's back on the same level playing field.
Then you don't have to worry about getting caught with mid-90s steroids.
Yeah. So my question about this, too, is, Thigpen is a running back by trade, I guess. We know Jerome Messam's going to be the starting running back. Helps with the ratio. Does this open the door for... Okay, we have Cameron Marshall and Trent Richardson as well. Does this open the door for Trent Richardson being back with the team and making the team again?
No.
At least for the first couple games?
I can't see this suspension having an effect on whether or not Trent Richardson makes the team. To me, Richardson makes the team if he can show that he can keep up with a Jerome Messam level of play. They're kind of a similar running back. You keep a guy like Thigpen around because he's that more elusive back. He's not the run you over type. To me, the only thing this suspension has an effect on is whether or not Marcus Thigpen makes the team.
Should be interesting to see what happens, because now we got an abundance of talent there. Cameron Marshall was our best running back last year, and I was eventually wrong about Trent Richardson. His first couple games really didn't impress me, other than one run for 17 yards, whatever he had. But that last game against Montreal, now maybe granted it was against a Montreal team that stopped caring, because look at their final 11 games. They stopped caring about the season. But Trent Richardson looked really good in that game. And it was a shame he got hurt at the very end, because he could have been used in the playoffs. And who knows, maybe things change because we get the ball a little bit longer and punt, or you know, grind out some more drives with him. Who knows? And things could have ended differently. But I guess it's a good problem to have, that we have so many quality running backs right now, when that last year on offense, that was the weak point, I guess.
Think about our depth 2 years ago compared to our depth across the board right now, and try not to smile.
Oh, it's just insane how much better this team has gotten the last couple of years.
And people still want to see Chris Jones get fired.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd fire him for this signing. Eddie Steele coming back for a one-year deal, and that's just, you're adding to that already scary D-line. And Eddie Steele, not that he was a disappointment last year, because he definitely wasn't. Maybe didn't put up the stats I think we've come to expect out of him. But when you get him with, you know, pair him with Zach Evans as a rotation for the Canadian spot, and then depending on the ratio, he could start in the middle as well. And then you have McKenna Henry to back them up. And then you have Charleston Hughes, Willie Jefferson on the edges, Toby Antigua, who was really good, really underrated last year, even though he only had 5 sacks, I think it was. He's a very good pass rusher. And then you throw in Nick James in that rotation too, I preach about him all the time on the show here. He made the difference on that defense to start the role after the season start, or after August. Sorry, Amy, bringing up our dog through the window and it's distracting me. Hi, Penelope. But Nick James, really, that was the turnaround of the season when Nick James started, and the defense just started rolling from there, and they got so much better. And you throw all these guys together, I do not see how you can stop this defensive line.
That is as scary a defensive line as you could put together in the CFL right now. If you were going to ask for five guys across the league and just pick and choose, salary cap be damned, it'd be a pretty darn good five-man group to go for. And we've got them all under, I say under salary cap, like the salary cap matters in March, but, you know.
You put a good article about that, about how right now the salary cap does not matter. It doesn't matter how many players the Riders, as long as they stay under the limit of players signed, it doesn't matter. Because moves will still be made, trades and cuts and all that kind of stuff, and maybe guys renegotiate their contract.
This isn't the NFL where you have to be under contract at all times, or under the cap.
All the time.
100% of the time, yep. No. But are we really surprised that Eddie Steele, signed back in Saskatchewan, given that he's been touring with the team for community events? I feel like this is one of those they've kind of held in their back pocket, going, we'll release this when we're, slowed down a little.
Well, I think it was a combination of that, but also with the salary cap as well, too. Hey, man, we're going to make some deals. We're going to see what we can do with the team. This is what we're willing to offer you right now. If something changes, maybe we'll, switch it up a little bit, but we want you back on this team. And I think he genuinely wants to be here. He was, when we had him in before the season started last year, he was excited to be here. And I think he was a key part to that team last year, and he's going to be another key part this year, especially when you do pair him with a Zach Evans. Those two guys.
Who do you stop on that D-line?
I don't know if you can. You got the league's, two-time defending sack champion
and then
Charleston Hughes.
And then the best defensive end in the league, in my opinion, in Willie Jefferson.
And he only had 8 sacks last year, but he could have had 15. He missed a bunch because he was right there, just got his hands on the quarterback, but the quarterback got rid of the ball. And how many times was he double teamed? And right now, pick and choose, who are you double teaming? You're going to have to double team Nick James in the middle because he's such a big guy and he just collapses the pocket that if he does that, you're going to allow the ends to come in on an inside stunt and they're going to have free reign at the quarterback.
You're going to have to bring seven or defend against seven or with seven O-linemen slash tight ends, whatever, almost every play to really properly block.
And it's so huge for the Riders because losing Henock Mwamba in the middle, now there's a little bit of a hole in the linebacker spot with Sam Hurrell. No disrespect to Sam Hurrell, but he's not Henock Mwamba. I think that's a kind of a fair assessment. Yeah. He's not an all-star like Henock Mwamba has proven he is.
Sam Hurrell has proven he can be a serviceable middle linebacker, and with that front four, and that, serviceable is more than enough.
And then our secondary is fantastic as well. So I think that Chris Jones is just looking, you know what? I can recruit import linebackers. We have a bounty of Canadian linebackers that we can kind of rotate in there. And, you know, you got Kevin Francis who can play the will position. He could also play Sam as well. Sam Hurrell, Cameron Judge, who did get in on active snaps last year before he did get injured, and he'll be back this year. And I mean, he's the number two overall pick from last year, so you know he's going to get a good shot at a lot of playing time this year. Dylan Grondin was on the team last year. Brandon Bartlett was on the active roster a bunch. So I think that we're going to see a little bit more of a rotation in the linebacker.
Middle linebacker by committee?
Pretty much. And I think they just want enough where they're not getting beat badly all the time in the middle, and that's fine. They're going to let everybody else, because the other 12 or 11 positions on the team in the secondary, we're not worried about. It's just that one spot. But even then, with the amount of talent that we have on that defense, I'm not really that worried about it.
Well, if you look at the talent across the board on the team right now, we go back to that depth thing from a few minutes back. If you've got 23 quality starting players on your roster, having a, as we said, serviceable middle linebacker as your biggest worry right now, I'm kind of okay with that compared to where we have been in the past. And we still got 2 months of off-season training camp. I guess, a week from today as we record, 2 months from then is the first preseason game in May.
Yeah, we got the draft coming up first and then mini camps.
It's spring. Football is here.
We are, yeah. First day of spring was on Tuesday for... not the first full day, but you know we're in spring, and yeah, we're ready. I can't wait for this team to start because we are. Well, I'm excited for this team.
I need them to move training camp back to Regina.
Yeah,
I want to go every day.
Right.
I don't need to work. I hope my boss didn't hear that, but you know, just sit me down at training camp. Let me watch this for
absolutely
a month and a half.
And the Riders also making a couple more signings on this past Monday. Wide receiver Brett Blasco and kicker Brett Lothar. Both were with the team last year. Again, depth pieces. Brett Lothar, I think, is a decent signing now that Quinn Van Gilswick is with Montreal and signed there in free agency. So having that backup kicker to Tyler Carpegna is important. So won't make the active roster, probably on the PR, injured list hidden somewhere.
The paper cut list.
Or he's just, you know what, your number's on the Rolodex, be ready just in case kind of thing. That might happen at the end of camp, depending on numbers and how the roster all breaks down. Brett Blasco was he with Winnipeg,
yep,
originally, and then signed here, or got traded here. And I mean, he's 6'4". He has the size that Chris Jones loves, and he's going to compete for that kind of rotational backup spot at the Canadian receiver behind Rob Bagg and Devin Bailey. So,
yeah, with Nick Dembski gone, that spot is open for some. For somebody to jump in, and I kind of like what he brought. I'm hoping he has a good camp.
He's a big body, and that's, I mean, when you're having going up into the red zone, if you can have a 6'4" guy go up against a, you know, a 5'10" cornerback, I like our chances there. So hopefully he bulks up a little bit, and another year of experience gets to him, and he'll be good to go. So we'll see what happens there. And one other thing here on the opening kickoff, really quick, Euclid Cummings. I wrote about this in my Tuesday Takes last week. Sorry I didn't do one this week. I actually did one, but I got busy at work. And unfortunately, I do a lot of my pivotal stuff here at work. But anyway, my question to you, Steve, did the CFL drop the ball here with the Euclid Cummings signing?
100%.
Not signing, but...
the him signing in BC or...
And then terminating his contract?
100%. They responded appropriately when the news broke, but it never should have come to that. And I mean, I find it very difficult to believe. And I'm not going to straight out say Ed Hervey is lying or, you know, Winnipeg.
Of course,
GM,
we don't know.
You know, I'm not going to go that far. But as a fan, I find it hard to believe that they wouldn't know to some extent. I mean, how does something like this sneak by the general manager of a football team? I mean, especially when Winnipeg was informed when the situation occurred and they informed the league. If the league didn't pass that on to the other nine or the other eight teams, that's where they made a mistake. That should have been public knowledge at that point, because there was the potential for, you know, what we saw now. And the league has made it very clear they have a no holds, you know, no, what's the word?
Zero tolerance.
They have a no tolerance policy for any kind of domestic abuse, sexual assault, domestic violence, anything like that. It's you're done. You're gone. To let this slide for, what is it, 2 years almost? A full season and an off season anyways, before it comes to anything. It's just, it leaves a really bad taste in my mouth.
It's a really weird situation, and we'll probably never know the full truth, which is probably pretty accurate about a lot of things, but is it the league? Was it BC Lions? And was it Ed Hervey? Like, who knows? So I think it's the truth, the real truth is probably somewhere in the middle, but, you know, I'm actually looking forward to CFL week, because you know Commissioner Randy Ambrosi is going to get asked about this, and that'll be something we'll keep an eye on Malbert there.
And we've seen he is not shy about answering tough questions.
Not at all.
So I really look forward to seeing.
I think it's just a matter of time before he gets asked at CFL week, and stay tuned. We'll be there and we'll find out, and we'll talk about that a little bit.
And sorry, before we move on, speaking of Euclid Cummings, I have to give a shout out to Greg. We all saw the BC Lions do their usual limericks, poems out to each team.
Which are great, by the
yep,
way.
I love it. It got teams and fans responding, which is exactly the purpose. Exactly. And they were actually pretty good. I'm not going to knock them for it. But his, and I was going to bring it up and I read it, but I forgot to do that before the show. But his response referencing the fact that Ed Hervey signed Euclid Cummings twice because, of course, the Lions brought up Daron Carter's pending charges, right? I have to give him a solid clap on the air.
There were some good rebuttals. Winnipeg's rebuttal to BC about theirs was absolutely fantastic. So
that was cold.
Go to the BC Lions Twitter page and find those St. Patrick's Day limericks that they did, and watch the teams and everybody respond. They were just great. Anyway, that's going to do it for the opening kickoff here. The opening kickoff is brought to you by Kathy Festian of Royal Page Regina Realty. And so I just mentioned that Commissioner Ambrosi will be answering, you know, that Euclid Cummings question at CFL week. But CFL week it'll be more than that, obviously. Player availability to fans and just the accessibility, that's what this whole week is about. And just getting drawing more interest into the league in kind of a down part of the season in between free agency and the draft. The Hall of Fame announcement gets made on Wednesday night. I don't know how they're going to top the announcement from last year when it was Anthony Calvillo, G. Roy Simon, Mike O'Shea, Calvin Anderson, just as players, and then you had the two builders as well. I don't know how they're going to top that, but I look forward to seeing what gets announced, who gets announced.
There's no way they can top that announcement. That was one of the best classes we have seen in...
ever?
Yeah, it's really hard to argue that. I don't remember a better one in my lifetime.
I know hindsight is 2020, and obviously they probably didn't know that Winnipeg was going to be hosting CFL week this year, but how great would that have been if Mike O'Shea was left for this year and being announced in Winnipeg as he's their head coach? Yeah, he played his career, most of it, as an Argo, but now when you see Mike O'Shea, that's the Bombers head coach. That would have been cool to have him announced in Winnipeg. I thought that would have just brought more fan engagement, especially from the Winnipeg locals who are kind of heeing and hawing about, do I go to CFL week? I saw it from last year. Yeah, it'd be fun, but I'm not sure.
You announce this and
he'll be around all week. I think that would have been, I'm sure he'll be around all week anyway, being that it's in Winnipeg, but having that added, you know, you're going to be a Hall of Famer now. I think that would have just elevated it. But again, hindsight's 20/20.
And if there's anybody out there in the Manitoba surrounding area and you are humming and hawing about this event, go. It was an absolute blast last year. I had a ton
of
fun.
It's a lot of fun.
And most of the, I mean, I enjoyed being in the media room and talking to the players and that kind of thing. That was cool. But to me, the most fun from last year was just walking around, seeing players, you know, standing on the sidelines, watching the same thing you're watching, you know, watching the Anthony Calvillo, or was it, the Warren Moon interview. And you saw half a dozen of the CFL players standing in the background, you know, in the crowd, watching this legend talk. You know, they were just like the rest of us. And they were walking around, seeing all the things that we were seeing. It was just neat to see CFL players kind of mingle with the rest of us.
Well, and they were allowed to be themselves too. They weren't in uniform and had that, you know, football mode cliche answers all along. They were just there to have fun and be themselves. And I mean, the list for players going this year is huge again. A lot of the starting quarterbacks are going to be out there. I think all of them scheduled to be out there. And so you're getting the big name recognition going
out.
Levi
Mitchell's not there.
Ah. He probably found out Daron Carter's going to end up going, and he's like, no, I don't want to go to the passing showcase and get picked off again.
Daron Carter intercepted his plane ticket and is coming instead.
Yep, I think so. But CFL week is going to be a blast, so stay tuned to Piffle's podcast for a lot of stuff on that. We'll cover the Hall of Fame announcement, who's getting in, and also player interviews. We're going to talk to a lot of the players this week and just see what else is going on. The combine is this week, so the future stars of the CFL put on display. We'll see who looks good. And I mean, the draft coming up, we're going to be talking about that pretty soon in the next couple episodes, and look at positionally who the Riders should draft, who we think look good at the combine. And we'll take a look at that.
So we're getting into actual football discussion.
Yes. Not just speculation, actual stuff happening. So that's a lot of fun. So stay tuned for CFL week coverage here on Piffle's podcast. And as always, we're going to have Tallgrass Apparel engaging with the enemy. Thanks to CFL Week, we're going to have a lot of chances to talk to other teams' players. And maybe in the next couple weeks, we'll have a couple Cypress Hills destination area Piffle's player profiles to bring you. A couple of the new players, Charleston Hughes and Zach Kolaros, new to the team. So stick around. Maybe we'll have a little something on them in the next few episodes of the Piffle's podcast. Okay, time to get to what I'm looking forward to the most out of this show. I mentioned it in the kickoff here. Seeing as it's episode 71 here on the Piffle's podcast, we figured we should probably celebrate that number somehow. And I mean, after all, it is a pretty important number here in Riderville. When you think of that number in the Riders, automatically you think Bobby Jurison. Joining us this week on the Rider alumni part of the show is Canadian Football Hall of Famer himself, Mr. Bobby Jurison. Mr. Jurison, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Oh, don't call me Mr. Jurison. You're going to make me sound old. Bobby.
Now, first off, we got fan questions given to us on Facebook and Twitter and everything. So Davidson wants to know, what have you been up to since you retired as a player?
Well, what I've been up to, let's see. After the Riders fired me, I started to come back home. I went and played with the Iowa Barnstormers for half a season. Hurt my neck pretty dang good. And my wife found me a job coaching at the university I played at. Coached there from 99 to 06. We didn't win enough. Coaches are hired to be fired. I got fired and retired. Went into the French restoration business with one of my buddies. Became a stripper. And I did that for the last 11 years until one of my good buddies got the head job here that I've known well since we were young guys. And he dragged me back in. I'm coaching back at Northern, going on my second season.
Okay, but I got to go back here for a second. You became a stripper?
You dang right I did.
How did that come apart? I've never heard that before. How did that...
I wasn't getting paid unless you take it off. I mean, it's furniture restoration. You're just taking the paint off the old furniture and putting a new finish on it. That's why we're strippers.
Oh, okay. See, I thought you were doing something else
that's
here.
That's what everybody thinks.
Right?
Everybody thinks the worst.
You know, a lot of people...
job that I did.
You know, there's a lot of lady fans in Riderville here that would... they wouldn't be upset by that.
I put on too much weight in the pool with stuff. That's why I had to quit.
Now, you're back coaching at your alma mater. How important was it for you to go back there and coach? Was that always in your plans?
Well, there's only two places I would ever coach. And that one would be with the Riders and one would be at Northern, because this coaching gig's a tough gig now. It takes you away from your family for a long time, and you put countless hours in, and I would only do it for two places, because the two places I love are Northern Michigan and Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And since it's such a huge time commitment, I'll never coach anywhere else.
And actually, that kind of answered the next question by Brad Fader. He wondered, would you consider coming back to the CFL? Has there ever been talk about you ever joining the Riders as a coach somehow?
Not really. Nobody's never really came up to me and approached me hard about coming back and coaching at the Riders. At this stage in the game, I'm getting up there, 53, turn 54 this summer, and I'm looking to win a national championship here. It's the only second national. If we do now, this is kind of eerie, guys. It'd be the only second national championship in our school history. Well, when I was with the Riders, we won the second Grey Cup in the history. So I'm hoping history will repeat itself here and we have a chance to make a run of the national championship. The coaching staff that we have here at Northern are some good old boys. I grew up with them. I played with them, coached with them, and we're excited. We're bringing back the traditions that we had when I was here as a player, and we're back.
So obviously coaching takes up a ton of your time right now. What kind of hobbies do you have on the side that keeps you maybe out of trouble or gets you into trouble?
Well, I'll tell you what, when we're living in God's country here in the UP in Upper Michigan, I love the outdoors. Anywhere from hunting to fishing to snowshoeing to biking to hiking, you name it, we got it. And it's just so beautiful here. We're on the shores of Lake Superior, and there's just countless things for us to do here.
What's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
Biggest fish I caught, guess what, was up out of La Ronge. We were fishing up at Jeff Fairholm. He had a lodge back in the bush up there, and we had a fly in and all that good stuff. And I think it was 46-inch northern.
Oh, yeah.
It's the biggest fish, and that was caught in Saskatchewan on a La Ronge.
Okay, now you can be honest with me. It wasn't 46 inches. Like, everybody exaggerates. It was,
well,
it was like 20?
54 then.
Now, going back to your time here in Saskatchewan, when you first got here, what was your very first impression?
That I loved it. I mean, I came from a small Division II school out of Northern Michigan, and our locker room, when it rained, it was underneath the stadium, and when it rained, my locker got wet. The stuff I had in there, I had to put a plastic bag over the top of my locker so it wouldn't drip through, and we were crammed, jammed in there, and when I saw the stadium, when I saw Taylor Field, not Mosaic, not the whatever the hell you guys are calling it now, when I saw Taylor Field, I fell in love with it. I mean, I said, this is the place for me. I said, this is just, I thought it was the best thing I've ever seen. And I loved it right from the start.
You know what? I'm with you. I love that old place too. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore. It's taken down and everything's gone now.
Yeah. Normie Fong, our old equipment guy, sent me photos when they were tearing the old girl down. And I just go, oh boy, I tell you what, got a little nostalgic when I saw that. A lot of countless hours on that field.
Absolutely. Now, Julie Dormuth wonders, is there a everybody knows about the classic signature Bobby Jurison bandana. Was there a significance behind it?
Well, there's big significance behind it. It started back in, I think, going into my sophomore year in college. I didn't wear it as a freshman because, the old saying, track the least amount of attention to yourself as possible. So I didn't want to come in as a freshman wearing a bandana. And my mother-in-law was the one that turned me on to that bandana. And ever since I wore it, good things started to happen. So I couldn't take the damn thing off. I was superstitious as a all heck, and I kept wearing it, and good things kept happening, and I stuck with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
So, story time here. What is your favorite road trip story that you have from your time in the CFL?
There's a lot of them, but the best one is when we won the Grey Cup, and we're flying home on the plane, and we're having some adult beverages on the way home. And who's sitting in front of me but the mayor? I can't remember his name. I think it was Archer, wasn't it? Oh, I can't remember at
good
the time.
Question.
But the mayor was sitting in front of me, and Dan Rasevich was a few seats, three, four rows in front of me. I said, hey, Dan, throw me one of those adult beverages back here. So he just wound up, and he threw it back there. I missed it, and it hit the mayor right in the head.
Oh, no.
He was so damn happy we won the Grey Cup, he didn't care. He said, oh. I thought he was going to be mad, but he was so dang happy. But, yeah, Raz bounced the beer right off the mayor's head.
Oh, jeez. What was your favorite CFL city to go to?
All of them. I love Canada. I loved every part, from the east to the west to the middle to you name it. They're all beautiful places. They all have that unique beauty. People go, well, how the heck can you love Saskatchewan? Well, how can't you? I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's flat. You know, the standing joke, you can sit on your back porch and watch your dog run away for 3 days. Yeah, you can. You can see a storm coming away from a week. Yeah, you can. You cross the border in North Portal and you can see Regina, but it takes you 5 hours to get there. Well, yeah, that's true too, but there's a lot of beauty involved in all that stuff too. I love it there. And then when you head out to the West Coast, you got the Rockies. You're starting in Alberta. You got the start of the Canadian Rockies. You head out east, the East Coast. It's all fantastic. It's a great place.
Now, I was told by Jed Roberts, formerly of the Edmonton Eskimos, to ask you how hard you worked all off-season training in an effort to beat Glenn Kulka's bench press record.
Oh, nobody can beat Glenn Kulka.
That's what he said. He said he'd beat
my ever-living butt off. And then here I threw up a number. I think it was 48, and at 2.25 on the rep test. And so Kulka, you know, he's going away and he's getting there. He's at 40, and all of a sudden he crosses his legs and he looks at me and he smiles and he pumps out about 15 more reps and he racks and he goes, I had enough. I couldn't even come close to beating Glenn.
aside from the 1989 Grey Cup win, what was your best memory as a Saskatchewan Rough Rider?
The first day I saw Taylor Field.
That simple?
That was the best memory, not even the Grey Cup. It was the first day that I saw the stadium and I fell in love with her. I mean, that place was, I was going to do everything in my power to stay there as long as humanly possible.
Sheldon Jones asks, if you felt as terrible as he did when you came back to Saskatchewan as an Argonaut, how tough was that?
Oh my God. I doubt it. I died a thousand deaths. That was, my wife, we were just talking the other day and she goes, do you have any regrets? I go, yeah, I got a couple of regrets, you know, and that was one of them. I mean, I should have took a step back from the situation a little bit better, but I was in such shock of what happened that, I wasn't thinking clearly at the time. And then it was one of my worst decisions that I made when I was playing in the CFL.
Did you ever get any really bad chirps from Rider fans when you were on the other side of the benches?
No, believe it or not, no. I used to get chirped worse when I played there. Our home guys would get on our butts when we weren't playing well. I mean, you know what? You know the fans. They buy their ticket. They're going to tell you exactly what they think. And, yeah, they were right. We were sucking that day, and they should.
Yeah, things haven't changed, that's for sure.
No. I love the Rider fans, man. Always have, always will.
Roy Pugh wonders, who was your favorite player to hit or tackle?
Favorite player? Well, every quarterback was my favorite player to hit or tackle when I could catch him. I mean, you know, I love playing against Matt Dunnigan because he was such a great competitor. And then I love Damon Allen because he was such a great athlete. I mean, I loved playing against all those guys. It was a blast. I mean, there was a lot of good quarterbacks in that league and a lot of good running backs in that league. And people here in the States have no idea what they're missing. I mean, the Canadian Football League is a special league and it's played by special players. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the NFL that couldn't play it down in the CFL because of the wide openness of the game and the play clock and the width and the length and the number of guys. I mean, it's just these guys don't have a clue. But every quarterback was the favorite guy to hit.
And there were a lot of them that you hit in your career.
Caught them once or twice.
Greg Cooper asks, who was the best coach you ever had in college or the CFL?
There was, once again, everybody has great qualities. I mean, you take the best of the man, and, you know, everybody's got a few of the qualities you don't like, but so do I. I mean, so I was that guy, too. I mean, I try to take the good qualities out of all of them. I mean, John Gregory was a great guy. He was a player's coach guy. Ray Yock was another great player coach guy. I mean, Jim Daly was a great X and O guy. Don Matthews taught you how to play the game at a high level. The coach that I had here at Northern really set the tone for me and was Herb Greinke. He was my defensive line coach and head coach, and he set the tone for me. He was an ex-Marine, and he taught me how to play the game with mental toughness, and that carried me through. The stuff that I learned here at Northern Michigan University, the techniques and the mental attitude and the fortitude and all that stuff came from here. But it helped, too, that I had a heck of a high school coach, and then plus after, you know, before that, it helped. My parents were the same way. So there's a lot of people. It's hard to say who I like the best. I like them all. I liked all their best qualities, even some of their negative qualities. I mean, it made me to who I am today.
Now, this question, it could be football related. It could be absolutely anything else. What is your greatest accomplishment?
Definitely being a father and having five children. I mean, that's been pretty dang fun. I mean, it's been a ride. My oldest son is 33, and my daughter's 31. My other boy's 27. The other one's 25. And then our bonus baby's 14. And that's been pretty god darn fun, I'll tell you that.
And finally for you here, this is the question that pretty much everybody asked, and this is for me too. When are you coming back to Saskatchewan to see this brand new stadium that we have and meet more of Rider Nation?
Oh, man, I want to get back to the Rider Nation, man. They rejuvenate me. They make me feel young again. I love coming to the games. When I get a chance and an opportunity, and when they need me back up there, I'm there whenever I can make her. Because that place is so special to me. The fans were fantastic. They'd come out and support you. And even when it was below zero and rainy and we sucked, and they still came and they backed you all the time. And I would love to be back there because it just rejuvenates my soul, and I love it.
And final word to you here. One thing to say to Rider Nation, what would you say?
I'll be back.
Love it.
Rider Nation, thank you. I mean, the 12 years that I spent there, you made it so special for me that words can't even explain. And it was a greater family experience, enriched our children when we were there. And I can't thank Rider Nation enough. I mean, I'm in debt to you guys, and that's why whenever I get the chance and opportunity to come back and support the Rough Riders and do whatever they need me to do, I'm there.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for your time. We wish you all the best, and we personally thank you for everything you've done for Saskatchewan and the Rough Riders. We look forward to seeing you when you get back up here again.
It was my privilege and honor to be a Saskatchewan Rough Rider, and thank you very much.
There is Bobby Jurison answering your questions that you guys sent to us on Facebook, on Twitter, and, I mean, Bobby J., what a great guy. Like, his energy level is still, the fact that he loves it here, and the fact that out of two places in the world that he said he would coach, here's one of them. To me, that's amazing.
If you're listening, Chris Jones, I know you pick some of the players from Amy's Hottie Bowl. How about...
That might be the original member of the Riders Hottie Bowl. Like, women have a crush on Bobby J. And he said he was a stripper, so I mean, that's kind of Hottie Bowl material right there, right? So, and Amy, speaking of the Hottie Bowl, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Yeah, you're out in the hallway playing with
Penelope. Yeah, now she's in the studio sniffing around.
And she does that from time to time. So if you hear a random bark, it's not Steve this time. It's actually a dog.
It's something cute for once.
Moving on here, we got one more thing to get to before the end of the show. And of course, it's Would You Rather. Amy, you came here just in time. You got a question for us.
Would you rather be in a pool of marshmallows or a pool of M&Ms?
Regular M&Ms? Or peanut M&Ms?
It just says M&Ms.
Because if it's just regular M&Ms, I don't care about it and I'd pick the marshmallows. But if it's peanut M&Ms, I pick peanut M&Ms.
Because you'd want to eat your way out?
Yeah.
I think I'd pick marshmallows because it would be soft and fluffy and so much fun to just fall in.
Could you imagine jumping off a diving board into a pool of marshmallows? Or sitting back with a book in the middle of a pool of marshmallows? That'd be great.
It'd be so sticky.
Well...
I mean, chocolate's sticky too, but...
I don't know. I
don't think there's a wrong answer with this at all.
The correct answer to this is yes.
I mean, get some hot chocolate and you can throw the marshmallows in there too. Or you know, if you have a lighter in your pocket, you can make some makeshift...
Roast them?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
Sounding pretty good now. I'm having toasted marshmallows for supper.
So the answer to would you rather is yes. I want all of that to happen. All right. Well... That's going to do it for us this week here on the Pivots Podcast. The next show, we're going to recap CFL week and how that ended up going. We'll have some interviews to play from there. And we're going to start to take a look at the CFL draft and whether Riders pick and what positions we think that they need to go after. So check out PivotsPodcast.com where you can find all that stuff, the latest Rider news, other CFL content, my Tuesday takes, Saskatchewan Rush stuff. I know, Steve, you take care of that. Greg has a CFL slants. And previous shows, interviews, all that stuff is available on the website as well. And don't forget to give us a follow on Twitter at PivilsPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Safamod.
And I guess I'm at CFL Hottie Bowl.
And then we have Greg at GregOnSports. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PivilsPodcast. Check out our Instagram page at PivilsPod. And don't forget that there are still some tickets available for the Piffles Podcast Banjo Bowl bus. Not many, though. They are going fast. So we're going to leave for Winnipeg on the Banjo Bowl the Saturday morning, bright and early. We'll have a little bit of time to tailgate before the game. And then we'll go to the game, have a lot of fun, spend the night in Winnipeg. And then we'll come home on Sunday afternoon sometime. So spots are limited. Let us know ASAP if you're interested in going. Single occupancy, $260. Double, $240. Triple, $220. And quad occupancy, $200 a person. That's a great deal, especially when you're considering you're spending the night overnight as well. So that price includes your ride to the game and back, game ticket, hotel for the night. Plus, we're going to have prizes, giveaways, and draws throughout the entire weekend as well. So if you're interested in going to the Banjo Bowl with us, just let us know. We'll get you on the list and we'll get that bus filled out. Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive. And a reminder that the Smarties Blizzard is back. Everybody's happy about that. And of course, buy one, get one, Blizzard, 99 cents. So make sure you check that out as well. Special thank you to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty, Tall Grass Apparel, Cypress Hills Destination Area, and Coney Island Poutine Cafe for all their support making this show possible. Thank you for listening. We're going to leave you with some more Beauty Killed the Beast. Check them out on Facebook. This is their song, Hometown.